Thank you, comrades, who've turned up today. The main idea of today is really start doing some preparation work for the general election next year. And I think some of us weren't quite expecting the amount of interest and response we got in the media in the general election. And some of them, quite a lot, well, some people expressed that they felt they didn't have the skills to actually deal effectively with media inquiries. People who had to either appear in the quite big broadcast we made or were interviewed on the TV or on the radio. So it's something that ECE discussed after the election, and we thought it'd be a good idea if we can actually look for some training opportunities for members. So that's the 12 o'clock item, is to have a bit of a brainstorm back, just see what training members feel they need. Well, I have got some information about that I've collected. Fortunately, I can't give it to you because I had a load of stuff to present on the screen, but the files disappeared on my computer. But I have hard copies, but the five copies won't print them today. No. But they're here somewhere. So I can share them to you on another day. The first thing though, apart from introducing the new speakers test, what we've got planned with the speakers test is that is to have a mock interview of a party speaker using questions from the speakers test, and Dave is going to be the Inquisitioner.
Jeremy Foxman,
and you're much scarier, believe me.
Dave Lambert is going to be...
I told you, he's cursed you all.
Sorry.
No, he's scary.
It's just the way
I'm
David.
Sorry,
you've got
enough.
Danny. He's going to be the victim.
Right.
If he sticks around that long. But before then, from the Elections Committee, Adam is going to do a short presentation on aspects of standing in elections.
I'll just come with the warm-up act. I'm not going to speak very long, just for the technical thing. It's...
Have you got handouts on this?
I haven't, afraid.
I'll just have the list.
It's... You know, you're qualified to be a candidate, depends on which kind of election that you're talking about. I mean, if it's a local election, you have to live or work in the area where the election will be, or the borough or the council which is taking place. If it's a regional election, it's the same thing. But if it's a national election, basically you have to be on the electoral roll somewhere in the United Kingdom. Now, there are certain disqualifications where people can't. Well, they can become candidates, but if they're elected, they can be disqualified. For a local election, if you're working for the local council, you can't stand as a candidate in the area of that council. And the same with national elections. If you're a national civil servant, you can't stand. In fact, we had this problem in Wales, where one of our candidates, because this applies for the European Parliament elections as well, but national civil servants can't stand. Well, sorry, disqualified from taking a seat, because you can stand, but if you're elected, you get disqualified, which incidentally happened in the local elections here in Lambeth. Somebody got elected as a Labour councillor in May, and she was a teaching assistant, I think. So she was immediately disqualified, and we had another by-election within 2 or 3 months of the election. But if you are, I mean, we could have got, around this problem, because the civil service does allow people to take unpaid personal leave for the period of election. So during that period, you're not actually a civil servant. But you'd have to declare to your boss, do you mind if I stand for the Socialist Party in an election? And and then it'll be clear what you are. And some greater civil servants can't do that. So that's basically the nomination thing. Who can be a candidate for the electoral law? Now, once you're a candidate, of course, or before you're a candidate, you have to be nominated. And the basic rule is, well, depending on what's going on, what election you're standing in. If you're standing in a, what's called a parish council election, which is a town council election, you only need two signatures. We have done that. I've been seeing. But for local elections and for national elections, you need 10 signatures.
And the euro. And the euro.
So you need 10 signatures. These signatures have to be people who are on the electoral roll for the area, the board or the constituency. Now, Brown just mentioned regional elections. It's a much simpler system there, which is more preferable because parties can test these things. So all that's required when we stand in the in European Parliament election, in the Welsh Assembly or the London Assembly, is a statement from the party's nominating officer, nominating the party to stand. So that we don't have to collect any signatures in these elections. But
did you say the Euro elections?
In the Euro elections and in the regional election, like in Wales or Scotland or Northern Ireland, I suppose, and the London Assembly elections, all that's required to stand is that the candidate has a declaration from the party's nominating officer. That must be me at the moment saying he's entitled to stand.
So that's it.
Even applies for people standing as individual constituencies, like in Wales and in London, because there isn't individual constituencies as far as the European Parliament is concerned. Now, I mean, the signatories, one is the poser, the other is the seconder, and the other eight are the assent, but it doesn't make any difference. But I mean, this is the main chore. If we're contesting a local election or we're contesting a parliamentary election, you have to go around and get the 10 signatories. Now, what we've done is you go along to the local council and you ask for a copy of the register of electors. And that's the sort of thing that you're not going to sell this to some firm so they can contact anybody on it. Depends on what your relations are with the local returning officer they might give you these a week or so before the election actually takes place, which gives you a chance. So what we've done, Jacqueline, Daniel, and me, we take one of these, we just go down one street and say, we're standing for the election. We're not asking you necessarily to support us, we're just asking you to support our right to stand in this election. And I'll pass this election register around.
There is a possibility that when you approach the local returning officer for a copy of that, they may well, depending on the returning officer and how they are, they may well turn around and ask you for the costs of production.
Well, yeah, if he does that, I'm going to say, do you ask that the Tory candidate? Do you ask that the Labour candidate? No, I don't. I mean, they might do that, but that's them bluff. I wouldn't accept that.
No.
But if they're going to be awkward like that, you have to wait until the notice of publication of the poll, and then he will give you it. But you have to sign a piece of paper which says you're not going to use this for any other purpose.
For commercial purposes.
Commercial purposes.
Yeah.
I mean, the only person you use it for, at the moment, we're using it to get people's nomination, and you have to put down the exact number of the polling gun.
You said a week before.
Yeah.
A week before what?
Well, I mean, we know, for instance, that the next year's general election, the poll is going to be declared on the 30th of March.
Yeah.
So, you'd hopefully be able to get a copy of the register before the 31st. I mean, technically they've got the right to refuse to give it to you, but I, if we've announced all your...
Why?
It's a flame, because it's easy, because you've only got about 10 days
don't leave it the last
to hand in the nomination paper. I mean...
Now, why can they refuse to give you a copy of it? Why can they...
Because they know that in this area, if we've contested elections for the last 20 years or so, and we're well known to the, not the attorney officer, but the deputy attorney officer, or the person in charge of actually running the election, and he knows us, and he will give it us before. But all the other parties will have it as well, because they've got to go through the same procedure
But on the 30th of March, they will give it out.
They'll give it out as of right, but I would... if once we've announced it in the press we're contesting somewhere, we should probably consult the attorney office anyway, well before the 30th of March.
Don't leave it till the last minute. We went down that road it does cause difficulties. Do all this red tape, all the process, procedures required.
It's only part of the red tape.
This part of it, do it well beforehand, like you suggested.
Well, I mean, we must be done, don't we?
Adam, when we're going to go and get the electoral roll when the poll has been announced, which is 7 months before the general election or election.
Well, it's not 7 months, but it's a month or so,
A few months before.
No, 1 month, actually.
Do we need to take ID with us? Do we have to have something, just that letter from the party?
I don't know you're doing anything when you're collecting the thing. I mean, I must confess, what I've done is dress up in a suit and tie, and I think you're from the local council. And you shouldn't do this, but generally, housewives are in there and they just sign. I don't know how Bill Martin gets on with his funny hat and short trousers, but they get them in the end. But I mean, the important thing is what we're asking them is. Is the party rule used to be you had to be a member of the party to sign the nomination papers, but we found that restricted them. The first election we contested in 1964 was in Bromley. That's where party members have been concentrated. Nowadays people in branches don't actually live in the same borough. So anyway, it's got abolished now. Anybody can sign the nomination paper from the party's point of view. We're just asking them to support us, but I thought we should be a bit hypocritical because we wouldn't actually have somebody who was a known BNP person or something like that signing our nomination paper.
Why not?
And we wouldn't be hypocritical enough to sign a BNP nomination paper, would we? To allow them to stand, or even the Tory, our line, our spiel is we want to stand in this election. We're not necessarily asking you to support us, but just asking you if you support our right to stand. Now, since we're talking mainly about the general election, you'll see on this electoral register which is going around that there's certain people who are only entitled to vote in local elections. It's marked with a G, because a European citizen can vote in local elections. So when we're contesting local elections here, we have a couple of people who had a G, a Portuguese person, a Hungarian person. But those people cannot sign it for a general election.
They've got a G.
They've got a G behind it. I mean, some other ones, yeah. I don't know whether you'll meet any. This is my only joke here. Your L is a peer or peeress, other than an Irish peer who's not entitled to vote in the parliamentary election, because they're already members of Parliament. They're members of the House of Lords. But I don't think there are any Lords living around them. There might be some, but don't ask anybody who's got an L against their name to sign, or has got a G. So that's the...
Do we tell the authors to actually check that?
Yes. I mean, yes, they do. I mean, if you make a mistake, they can cross it out, and you have to go out and get another one. But that's why Brown's advice is get this thing in as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Because if there's any problem, and you can hang on at the last moment on 5 minutes to midnight, 5 minutes to noon on the Friday, and he says wrong, you won't be able to stand.
Adam, just a couple of questions, please.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
When we get the electoral roll going out for the nominations at the end, say 30th of March, that now, if we get them done in a week, it's better to do it that way than back in.
Well, you can get it done in a day. I mean,
I'm saying it's not that you get it done, it
shouldn't take you a week to get it done.
Sometimes it does take.
I mean, yes, I know, but that would be getting one a day.
I mean, we got that time, we got lucky, we had absolutely no luck, and we walked it on up the street.
Then, once you got this, then you have to hand it in with the nomination papers.
Does it all have to be on this, on one copy of the nomination form, or can we, in theory, get...
There's a form which has ten, you could have an eleventh one on the same form
because the form will have to say, you know, who is the candidate and what party they're standing for and things like that. So it's, I could have bought a copy of that up in the archive, but it's official nomination form which we've got proposer, seconder, eight dissenters, and you fill in the. The number, which is, well, this one here would be, this is BJAC, and then you put the number 764 or something against it in the thing. But I mean, generally, we do that. The people, you know, the point is, so you decide and write your name in capital, and we'll fill in the rest and show them the electoral register.
I have done it when I was a candidate in the past, but I wasn't sure if you could actually take two forms along the tape.
Well, you could take two forms.
Some signs.
Well, you could. I mean, nothing. Yes, you can if you want.
I'm thinking about doing it if we could do it in advance.
Yeah, but you can't do the two forms. I don't know. It's an interesting question whether you could amalgamate the two forms together and say that it's 10. I don't know. I've never done that. It might be a bit risky. You've been an agent as well, have you?
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, but
I don't remember that sort of
thing. Well, you've been an agent. But I wouldn't do that because.
What you could do is you could have to take
two forms around. So you get them designed twice. You have to do that once we contested here. We contested three people standing in the same. But it's asking a bit much of people, I think, to sign more than one form. They might not want to know what they're signing, the mortgage away or something like that, some insurance scam.
No, really, I think if you knock on the door and you look reasonably tidy, and you're dead straight with people, tell them who you are, tell them what's going on, then they're either going to reject you or they're going to sign. I mean, just signing once is, signing three times is not an awful lot more difficult.
No, it isn't, but I mean, it's...
Another point is that when you do get a nomination, say in a local area, make sure that you do the leaflets, that they get standard, that you keep them for the next time.
I'm not too keen on that myself necessarily, because I say, look, this is all you have to do is we'll catch you again, and you went for the book. But I mean, some of them express interest. I mean, you know, so, oh yeah, it's like the Labour Party, the not socialist, things like that. You know,
yeah. One question I've got, though, in terms of sort of planning workplaces, on average, in your experience, because you've probably done as much of this for the party as anybody else. On average, how many houses do you have to knock on to get, say, 10 people all signed?
Well, it would be up to 50,
Yeah.
I mean, some people are not in. You don't get all that many refusals, but it's people that are not in.
So, in other words...
I've done it mainly in the afternoon. Yeah. So you've got many just getting housewives and people, but you can do it in the evening.
So it's roughly something more in the order of 50 rather than 500.
Oh yes, yes.
You don't get that many refusals.
I mean, you can go down the we went down Old Street, which could have been 50 houses even on the 25 lane side.
Yeah.
No, went next street. Okay. And we
I don't want to reopen up the entire discussion yesterday about the London mayoral election, but that would be relevant as a consideration.
It would be like contesting 33 seats. Mm. You'd have to get 10 in each separate thing, and they wouldn't, you know.
And so on average, you'd probably have to knock on 50 odd doors in each one.
Well, yes.
To get an answer, the thing is to remember that once you do get an answer, proportionally, you're likely to get somebody to sign up for it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Didn't just get the answer.
I mean, what we can do, because when we've actually got party members in, and we get them to be the proposer in the centre, because people don't necessarily want to be the first person to decide something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you probably have in some of the boards or some of the constituencies we can test, you might have party members or sympathisers who can sign it anyway. And then you get the others, 8 or 9. So you can say that.
Yeah, didn't Bill Martin say that it's an hour and a half once corrected the 10 signatures?
Yeah, I mean, if you're lucky,
Yeah. It can happen like that.
Well, then, you can be out there. Down to me, once you had a fade in one street, all the others were in the same street.
The last time we went out, it was a lovely day.
Yeah.
And I figured we was going to be out for a while.
Yeah.
And we got it done in no time.
Yeah, but I mean, on other occasions, it takes
it
longer.
But I mean, even so, it ain't a problem.
You have to average it, don't you? Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me...
Well, you can say, just I would like to say it takes about 3 hours to get maybe...
Just one point, one very important point. Right? Regardless of how you were tempted to do so, right, it may be kept that you need one signature, right, and it's getting late in the day. Regardless, do not sign somebody up.
Oh, no.
Right, whatever you do. Because although, generally speaking, the returning officer don't send their officers out to check the signatures, they do, you know, send out the check signatures. Not saying that they check yours, but they are sent out to make sure that the person who supposedly signed the form actually signed the form.
Okay, yeah.
And then, if you found out...
Hold on. Are you saying that if someone's...
Another point is, make sure that they haven't signed for another candidate.
Yes, so that's what I was going to make. Yes, yeah. Because if they have already signed for another candidate, you can't sign them for.
I've never asked anyone that.
No, but I mean, they would take it to say.
Yeah.
I mean, the people that might check or can check as well are the other candidates. If they think, you know, suppose it's a close thing between Labour and Liberals or Labour and Greens, and if we stood, we'll take votes from Labour, they might say we'll try and get this thing to be in. They could do that, but I don't think they.
You've got the procedure to see if they can disqualify you.
Well, one occasion around here, this woman said, I'm a Liberal Democrat. Yeah, sign it. It's a Liberal Democrat, so hoping we take votes from the Labour Party. Okay, so I mean that's the first. I mean, say nomination papers. That's the first one. The actual 10 people that signed the nomination paper. Now you need some other papers. One is the candidate's consent to nomination, which has their name and their address and why they're eligible. I mean, normally it would be because you've lived in the thing, but you know when we stood here, we said we work in that. So, but presumably for a parliamentary election, it'll be where you live. But they also want to know your date of birth, just to check you're over 18. So, and this has to be signed, dated, and witnessed by somebody. So that's the consent to nomination form. Then you can appoint an election agent, which is another form which the agent has to sign, you have to sign. But if you don't put an agent's form in, you're automatically your own election agent. So, I mean, that's, if you make a mistake there, it's not the end of the world. You're not going to get banned from standing, but you're going to have to work at the end. Then the other thing is, of course, we want to use the party name on the ballot paper. Once again, you have another paper signed by the party's nominating officer saying, I authorise so-and-so to stand this election for the Socialist Party of Great Britain using this short and form, which in fact up to now has been the Socialist Party GB. But that's what we've used ever for the last 20 years or so since our conference resolution. So if that paper is missing, what will happen? You'd be on the ballot paper with nothing against you. You wouldn't be an independent, you'd be a be a nothing.
If we had a logo.
Yes, so
that's the same point.
Yes, I was coming to that. We will have a logo. And the same, we haven't got one yet, but it's going to be decided at the next DC probably. And we've got a simple design, because that's what happens now. We haven't got a logo. You see all the other parties with their logos. There's a blank space for us, so we decided that after the experience of the European elections that we should have a logo. But this is talking about party internal things. I call it.
Which one, though?
It can't be this, because it's all can't be the colour. Is this 2x2, is it?
That's just showing you the design, but there's a monochrome that will be.
Speaking of the paper. I think we should call this the party's emblem on the ballot paper, because we're going to have to decide that now, fairly quickly, and the logo can wait a lot. So it's probably something like this. In black and white, because you can't have a colour. But it won't be that slightly smaller than that. It'll be about 2 centimetres by 2 centimetres. Mm-hmm. But we've done reductions of these in black and white. I think they're still legible and distinguishable compared with you've seen the things of all the other parties. So those are nomination papers. You have to hand them in by a certain date, and other things after that, which you can withdraw them and things like that, which we don't do. So that's what has to be done, basically. After the election, the agent has to fill in election expenses. But they don't check these properly, but I mean, our election expenses have mainly been the publication of the I don't think anything would happen to you incidentally if you didn't hand them in. I don't suppose the screening law such or Mr. Blobby do. It's not a legal requirement. If you don't, you don't. Nothing
what would we fill in?
You have to fill in to say, I, as election agent, authorised this expenditure on behalf of this candidate. I mean, it's important for the other parties, because they can spend right up to the limit. Yeah, you say you can spend, £3 per person on the electoral roll. If you spend more than that, you could be unseated. So
I don't understand what you're talking
there's,
about.
There's limits to how much a candidate or a party can spend in an election, in a ward or a constituency. I mean, say it'll be something like, I don't want to do this for a party, we're never going to spend that, but say it was 50,000. So we will spend probably 2,000 or something like that. But we have to say that that's what we've.
What advertisements?
Yes, advertising, hiring school,
everything.
I mean, the good news for candidates is that you're not allowed to buy people a round of drinks in the. As opposed to. There's a word for that. We'll be damaging on this candidate.
Thank you.
And then that has to be endorsed also by the candidates that I. And that's. There's other stuff which the party's national treasurer, because if we do contest 10 seats, there'll be something else which won't concern will be the campaign expenditure. Between now and the general election, you have to declare that as well. So basically, those are the what nomination papers are. Legalities. We've had at least four people in this room who've been election agents, but I mean, I've been election agent most of the time, and Bill Martin has, but I'm hoping somebody else will be election agent for at least some of the Kent constituencies. The path compared to what you've got to do for the other thing that we've got down here, which is the free postal bill, and this only applies in European elections, but it applies in Parliament. It doesn't apply to local elections. We've got to distribute our own leaflets. But the post office have regulations about what you can put on your manifesto. The wording at the top has got to be 10 points or something like that. I can't remember, it can't be smaller. And you've got to say what election is and what constituency and what the name of the party is. But by and large, they're quite liberal, but you mustn't sort of advertise stuff for sale or something like that. But the way we get around it is, please write off more information about our aims in this election. Please write off for a copy of the Socialist Standard. But the authorities are quite. The authorities, it's a post office, you have to send up to the post office in Sunderland somewhere and they approve it. So it's best not to get the stuff printed before we get the proof of the post office. But then the post office require the manifestos to be sorted by postcode. But the printer will do this as long as we get. I mean, they will supply what the postcode is for constituency. I mean, this one here is SW4, SW8, I think SW11. They've got to be sorted by that and deliver to a particular post office. But we didn't do this, because they sent us the wrong form. We didn't do this for the South East region. We just did it by constituency. And one of them said, "Well, we sorted it. Here's the bill: £7 for this." But we said, "Look, we sorted it out. It's the fault of the post office. They sent us the wrong form with it." But the printer will do this, but we need to give to the printer, the exact breakdown of how many I don't know what happened was, whether when you did it properly. Yeah. We didn't do it properly, but it wasn't our fault.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you could have they'll all be there. They won't. And they won't be. I mean, that's the main panic of the election agent, I think, that doesn't go wrong, because this is over in a couple of weeks. But because we're mainly contesting general elections to get this free postal distribution, that's the complicated thing.
So you postcode. You do need to look up like SW4 and not SW47UN.
No, I'm giving SW4, yeah.
The main thing that in regards to the manifesto is that the big possibility is that we'll have one printer doing it, right, for the whole of England. That's what the big possibility is. Yes. It saves a lot of hassle rather than doing it at the local level. Right? Then the costs of their leaflets then will be split up for each constituency, so that you'll be able to put that down on your your election agent form and etc. etc. But there will be a difference in regards to Wales, because we'll be going over and paying lip service to the Welsh language, right? So consequently, we'll be getting a leaflet in Wales produced in Wales, and we'll have to handle that end in regards to distribution.
Now, socialized ambith, is it?
Yeah, right. Now, when it comes to the post office distributing, some distribution centres turn around and say, right, go put them on pallets, right? As long as they are separately labelled for the postcoding, etc. But other distribution centres, what we're going to find is that they want them on individual pallets. So you might have a couple on one pallet, right, a couple of bundles on one pallet, and a couple of bundles on another pallet, etc., etc. This pushes up the costs.
But what we did was we get the printer to make contact with the post office. The post office appoint somebody to be the person for this particular area, to put them in touch with exactly what they want. I'm okay. Because the ones if we do these five in Kent and Oxford, that will be six for the people that have already had experience of us.
The other thing you'll find is that if the post office finds something wrong with the way you dispatch the manifestos to that distribution centre, they will get in touch with you, not with the printer. Right? So don't live under the assumption that any problems are the printer's problems and not yours. Right? They will be yours, and it'll be up to you to sort it out.
Well, literally.
And further to that, you'll only have short notice to sort it out.
Literally sort it out. Once in one election here, how do you go down to Nine Elms and sort them out postcode. So, I mean, these are things that can go wrong. You need somebody there that can do it at the top of the
Does the post office not themselves do all that. The printers send it to the post office.
Yeah, yeah, but if there's something wrong, if the printers haven't done it right, or we've given the printers salon instructions, then...
So if it's done correctly, it's done correctly. It's the printers to the post office and we can forget about it. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, when you say that, you know, done correctly, I mean that we had there was a couple of crises during, you know, during the European elections. The one in Southampton or Portsmouth said they haven't been sorted by postcode. We will do it, but we'll charge you £7 per thousand or something like that. But and somebody else didn't arrive at the right time, and this was going slow, and then the bloke was driving around. We couldn't find the police.
And then where's we got the days mixed up?
So I mean, things like that. So you need to be, whoever is the agent, needs to be in constant touch. I mean, that's the most worrying part, I think, actually, of contesting an election when we've got free distribution.
It just strikes me that, I mean, a lot of this is process and procedure.
Yeah.
And if you haven't done it before, it's actually quite complex or potentially complex. What we really need is perhaps a very short pack. Mm. Which is a guide for election agents, and a guide for parliamentary candidates or council.
Maybe
a few pages. That's what we need, so that you know, you get this sort of situation. You've got something you refer to. Right, now I understand. At this point, they have to do that and make sure that these things are in place with the postcodes and so on.
I mean, obviously Brian will be an agent in Wales. I'll be an agent maybe for here. Bill will be agent for.
Yeah, but by the nature of what we're doing, we're going to get people that have never done this.
When this exists already, I mean, how does it be true of the net?
Some of it probably can.
But most of what you're requiring, right, is already out there with the post office. They give the guidelines.
Yeah.
Right. All it means for us is just to summarise that guidelines.
Well, what's really important, what isn't important, and what's
not. Yes, exactly.
So this would go in our manual, the election manual.
Yeah, I mean, it was on, you know, first name terms of some of the people they will give you an election manager, they'll have an election manager to pick up the suit, and you want to liaise with them, yeah.
Is there anything that we can't find on the Electoral Commission's website?
I don't like the Electoral Commission's website, but you won't find the stuff at one post office on the Electoral Commission's website. It'll be on the post office's, what's it called, Royal Mail's website. But we've got a copy of. I mean, they will produce a glossy booklet on it, which will tell you. But I think you're right. We need to say which parts of it are important, which not, because the more complicated thing. If you actually can have, the other party will do this. They can have it addressed to each elector.
Yeah.
And then they have to do what you're talking about. It sorted by, sorted by street. But then we don't do that.
That's quite powerful psychologically.
Well, you said it in the other days, so I remember people here writing on the names of people, addressing individually to people in some elections. You could do that, I think. I'm not sure, actually.
Cost more.
Whether you can do it for part of a constituency I'm not sure, actually. But the post office isn't logical. I mean, in the European elections, you'd have thought they could have done it all by postcode, but they didn't do it. All the ones for SW, whatever it was, well, not SW, KT or BR or something like that, you'd have thought that, we had to do it by parliamentary constituency, even though the parliamentary constituency have got no relevance to the European election, not even to the way the votes were. Accounting, but that's the post office Royal Mail interpreting strictly what the Act said. But by constituency and postcodes within the constituency.
Postal district.
Hmm?
By postal district.
They look at
from the point of view of distributing that, see?
Well, yeah, but then, I mean, there's parts of SW8 that are in this constituency, and that's it. So they, during the London elections, for instance, we've contested them. We can't just say SW8, here you are, SW8.
Yeah.
They'll make you break it down into. But it doesn't apply, as in the European elections. But, I mean, that's kind of thing, because that's the main reason that we contested these elections, to get the free post distribution. This is the thing we need to get. Right, there's quite a bit of work involved in it. That's it, that's it. People look impatient here, that is. It's looking nervous.
But, right, Adam. I'd like to introduce Howard.
Are you Rob?
I'm Rob. Howard Pilot is one of our was one of our candidates in the South East region European election earlier this year. Howard's agreed to chair this part of the session and hopefully the afternoon bit as well.
Sure.
Howard's a fairly new member part. I think you joined about 2 years ago. It's good that Howard is here because Howard's actually had some experience in doing presentation skills training for the TUC.
Shall I say something about
please do, Howard.
I'm aware that I'm coming here as a bit of a sort of outsider in a sense. I mean, this is the first time I've ever come up to the office.
Remember,
as it were, I'm an outsider in the sense that I'm a kind of unknown quantity. Yeah. I haven't met you before.
You did.
To an extent, yeah.
We've seen you.
Right, funny enough, my dad was a member 60 years ago, but that's another story. I mean, I thought what I might be able to help with is... I suppose a sense of focus, and I have offered also to run some public speaking / presentation skills courses. I'm an associate at the TUC and I do a lot of this kind of training for senior union officials, sort of assistant general secretary, deputy secretary, that kind of level. I do a fair amount of it, and I mean that's also general sort of presentation stuff. I've also been a teacher and a teacher trainer, so you know the notion of communication is quite sort of dear to my heart, as it were. And I was looking at the stuff here, and in conversation with Rob, I thought there might be some things I can offer because I do this kind of stuff, and just in terms of you know, as it were, focusing on certain sorts of things, and I mean especially things like, I suppose, key messages. You know, are you telling everybody everything at once? Or, you know, do we have a key message? You know, why are we doing this? What's the purpose? You know, what are we actually saying? You know, what are the kind of, would there be some kind of commonality across what we're saying, some kind of key thread or something like that? Which might be useful to think about. You know, you might be sitting there and thinking, God, we've heard this rubbish, it sounds Malcolm Tucker or whatever it is, you know, to Peter Mandelson or something like that. But just in terms of the kind of stuff that happens at all levels from people addressing, you know, sort of meetings of large numbers of people, or to what's called the organising movement within the trade union movement, the idea of the way in which you're actually getting people interested in belonging to a trade union or becoming active or taking on an agenda or doing something which is a little bit different or slightly changing their perspective. Way in which this is being promoted within the trade union movement, especially, okay, has got, I think, maybe one or two things that might be useful to you. I mean, you might not think so, but, you know, I think it might be useful to have a listen to this stuff. And we might work towards running a session at some point, which is strictly based on that. But what happened was the way it was running here, I just thought it might be helpful if I sort of facilitated some of the things that were going on today. Does that help?
Yes.
That's brilliant, yeah.
Okay.
Some of this stuff we want to go in a bit more depth at the 12th.
Yeah, no, I understand. But I just thought I'd give a little bit of context of why I'm here. You know, I'm sitting here, not one of you lot kind of thing. You know, because I've just like come off that street almost.
Yeah, okay.
Right, okay.
You're afraid it's starting in front of the microphone.
Sorry, I'm not used to microphones.
No, I know, but...
I don't know if someone wanted, if someone from the election committee still wanted to do a brief introduction to this session. So why we have to, why we have to have a,
oh, yeah.
In context of this.
Well,
Peter said about the election.
Well, this arises out of our experience of the European election. I mean, in the past, there were our highest speaking in the street corners and formal meetings. But what surprised us, in fact, there were more requests and publicity from radio and television than we did from the local press. So, I mean, you know, deal with the press. Anybody can deal with it, and somebody else can write it and be signed by the candidate. But with local radio stations expect the candidate, you know, himself to appear and be interviewed. But also, we've got in our party's rules that to be a candidate, you have to pass the speaker's test. It's the only mention in our rulebook actually of the word speaker's test. And well, most of you here yesterday. The old speaker's test is testing your knowledge of history and Marxian economics and test of history. So we've got a new one now which is more tuned to the sort of questions people are likely to be asked if they are a candidate. So, I mean, although it's called a speaker's test, it really is a candidate's test. And you probably know about it, how the press will ask the trick questions and this sort of thing. So one of the highlights of our campaign was, in fact, Dan had been interviewed on the politics show for 5 minutes. So this is going to be a session where we're going to Dave will drew up this questionnaire. It's going to be Jeremy Poxman, as we have it.
Dave Perry.
Well, it's going to be the other bloke. And Danny's going to be Danny as
well. I think I prefer Paxman.
Okay. and Danny's going to be our. He would be one of our candidates if you don't know where yet. He might be able to have a chat with him, but he's normally the candidate here in Vauxhall. So, I mean, so Danny's an experienced candidate who's done this. But, I mean, anybody else who's going to be a candidate might have to do something. Well, it won't quite be as bad as this, I don't think, but you'll have to, because we have.
This has been built up for some sort of horror show.
As bad as this, I mean it's not as tough
as
as long as this, because remember what was in the Oxford interview for 2 minutes by by Lady Oxford, but you weren't probably prepared and so on. So you'd probably be asked, you did things over the, well, I think Dave did things over the telephone and things like that, so we need to be able to answer this type of question. So we're trying to make it as much as we can like a rolling programme. So we've got swivel chairs here and water and stuff in
front. Understood.
And right over to Jeremy and
I think I'm going to have to ask you to make it just for 20 minutes or so.
20 minutes?
Well, it's at least 20 minutes on there. I did this in 3/4 of an hour. Yeah.
And you go through a rigmarole of when I did state politics, did you not? First off, they took a shine off me bald head. And so you go into makeup. I wonder what the big false nose was for, but anyway.
I've got one of those anyway, so that's
fine. And then they mock mic you all up and then send you out.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
You didn't get offered the hospitality
group or anything? Oh, yeah. Sit around outside, and you know, would you like a coffee? They're very pleasant. They do their best to put you at your ease. So, it's not exactly like a terrible experience. But the best way is to just try going and just try and relax and sort of have it in your head if you're going to do this. It's not gonna come out exactly how you want it, and there is a chance that you'll come out thinking, oh shit, I should have done that like so much better. But then you'll get something out, and you'll do better next time. And in the great scheme of things, it doesn't really matter that much as long as you've had a go. You know, the first few times I did Speaker's Corner, I was hopeless. But then what that does, that makes you think about, you know, what you said and better ways of saying it, and you'll get questions that you couldn't really answer properly, and then you'll do something with that. But anyway, I mean, I'm waffling, so...